Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's fiction podcast. I'm Janet Hutchings, EQMM's editor. This month we feature the work of Eli Craner, a writer who burst onto the mystery scene when he won the Peter Lovesey First Crime Novel Contest in 2020 for his book Don't Know Tough. That novel went on to claim the Edgar Allan Poe Award for Best First Novel and was named one of the best crime novels of 2022 by the New York Times and one of the best books of the year by USA Today. Also in 2022, the Arkansas writer, who was previously a professional football player, made his debut in EQMM. Here is Eli Craner reading his first story for us, Double Fly Rocket 87, from the January-February 2022 issue.
$2 for a Snickers bar, $4 for a bottle of Coke, nachos, $7, $7.50 with jalapenos. Damn, Nas, we're about to make a killing. The concession stand line curled its way across the Walk of Fame, each brick stamped with a name and a year, all that remained of the Eagles from days gone past. Anton Burkhead and Nas Taylor's names were etched down there somewhere, a less-than-average quarterback and a record-setting receiver from the class of 06. Anton adjusted the brim of his Stetson and said, "You brought it, right?" Talking to Nas, but keeping his eyes on the line of hungry teenagers. Nas looked like he could still suit up for the Enoch Eagles and high-step his way into the end zone. Except Nas was 30, Anton 31, and the Eagles had just kept on soaring, leaving both of them behind. "You ain't got to keep asking me about it, Burke." Anton hated the way his one black friend called him Burke instead of Anton. His proper name had a ring to it, a little swag, like maybe if you didn't know him, just saw his name on paper, you'd think Anton Burkhead was a brother. Both men stood a few feet back from the line, leaned up against the concession stand in the shadows of a Friday night, the light shining down on halftime and the mighty Eagle marching band. All across East Texas, West Texas, Texas in every direction, the same scene was playing out. The same tired characters showing up only to find their parts recast. Former jocks and drum majors forced off the field and into the bleachers. The bad kids vaping instead of smoking down below. Like how Anton Burkhead had been replaced by Matt Abernathy, the Eagles' starting quarterback trotting past the concession stand now, cleats crunching as Nas said, "Look at the kid. Got your old jersey on and everything, man." Anton sucked his teeth, wanting to get back to the play at hand. "Look at them, stuffing wads of it in that bank bag." A good-looking Mexican woman handled the money inside the concession stand. A few heavier white ones clomped around behind her, squirting hot cheese into plastic trays, plucking giant dill pickles out of gallon jars with the same tongs they used to roll the Oscar Mayer wieners. The rest of the Eagles made their way out from the locker room and onto the field. Anton, watching Nas watch the players, worried his go-to receiver was getting cold feet. "Remember that time we played Lincoln in the playoffs? You scored 7 touchdowns. Didn't drop a pass." Nas nodded. "I'll never forget that game," Anton said, watching as the crowd migrated back to the stands. "But they will." "Oh, so that's what this is about." Anton put 2 fingers to his eyes. "This is about money, Nas. It's simple." "Simple, huh? Like you said on the phone. It'll be like old times, baby. I'll play, you get the score. My old quarterback trying to talk ball to me, but this..." Nas cut his eyes to the concession stand, then back at Anton. "This ain't no game, man." In the distance, the ball shot off the kicker's foot, spinning end over end as fireworks exploded. Blue and gold, Eagle colors, against the backdrop of an East Texas sky. Nas flinched a little and Anton sucked his teeth again, disappointed, wondering if Nas had really brought the gun like he'd asked him to. Both sets of bleachers were completely full now. The concession stand line depleted, Just a few pimple-faced boys hanging around, making funny faces every time the cheerleaders jumped up and touched their toes. Anton looked past them to the Mexican woman, trying to guess how much money she had in that bag. Nas turned from the game and said, "Just being here makes me sick." Going on and on about how Coach Harris and the rest of Enoch had made him out to be the great Black Hope, a chance to put the Eagles on the map, like what Dez Bryant and Adrian Peterson and Earl the Tyler Rose Campbell had done for their tiny oilfield towns. Anton didn't want to hear it. He'd never even had a chance to escape the East Texas Pine Curtain. Never had the potential. A 5'9", flat-footed white boy with one bad knee. Still, Anton made the most of what God had given him, riding all those touchdown passes to small-town celebrity, scoring with the pretty girls before they got smart and moved on. "Feel better?" Anton said, cutting Nas off, still going on about how his grandmama always wanted him to be a Longhorn. Nas said, "I feel fine." And the scoreboard buzzed in the distance. Anton lifted four fingers to the sky. "How many times I gotta tell you this ain't no game, man?" "But it's the fourth quarter," Anton said, arms still raised like the players on the field, fingers flexed, feeling better about Nas bringing the pistol, but still not sure. "We'll run it just like old times, Pard. Double fly rocket 87. I'll give it a little fake, some play action, while you get in behind them, and then we're back in the end zone. Eagle score. But we wait till after the game, when all them booster club mamas are cleaning up, emptying out the popcorn machine and sweeping up the floors." "That's the plan," Anton said, looking past Nas to the boys jogging back from the sideline now. "Double fly rocket 87. They'll never see it coming." Gabriela Menchaca had stayed close to the money all night, trying not to think about how much she'd crammed down in the blue bank bag. Enough to fix the dent in her Nissan Altima, the new one on the bumper that just happened the other day. The white woman with the pretty eyes coming in the cell phone store, asking everyone, "Do you drive a black Altima?" Gabby nodding, saying, "Yes," but thinking, "See." The woman said the dent was small, didn't even crack the paint, but she would still call her insurance company if it was necessary. Gabby asked about the dent again, the size of it, the woman's pretty eyes hopeful, then relieved when Gabby told her, no, it's just a small one." Except it wasn't. It was more than just a dented back bumper. It was the system. This country that she called her home, everything bought and paid for in cash, no records, no paper trails. The Menchacas like ghosts in the East Texas pines. But for her boys, Gabby prayed, life could be different. Gustavo and Chewy played offensive line for the Eagles, seniors, big boys, drank 8 gallons of whole milk every 5 days, ate 10 pounds of ground beef, the meat she used to make all the burritos, tacos, and chimichangas. Gabby loved them in a way she'd once loved Javier, their father, lost to the oil fields now for months at a time. That bastard rarely sent money and drank what was left of it when he came home. Still, the boys remained, her whole world. And the best part? They were legal. Born over in Belmont, Texas, a hospital with a sliding glass door. The Menchaca boys. Gabby grinned, just thinking about it. Were birthright citizens. A grade school kid bellied up to the concession stand and asked for a red Powerade as he pushed a 5 Gabby's way. She lifted the lid and looked down, seeing only blue drinks floating in the water. Her fingers were cold when she put the drink on the counter and the kid said, "Red. This is all we have." Gabby had the 5 in her hand, thinking of Gustavo and Chewy again, how there might be 9, maybe 10,000 bucks in that blue bank bag. Her boys could eat like kings, and Gabby wouldn't have to clean house on the weekends after cleaning the La Quinta Inn all week. She was sick of cleaning up other people's messes. "I want a red one." Gabby wanted to call the boy a mocaso, but she didn't. "I want a..." "Game's almost over," the largest woman in the concession stand said, the president of the booster club, the one they all called Rhonda. "If you'll just take this here blue one, little buddy, I'll even let you have it for free." The boy's eyes went to the Powerade, then crawled up slow to Gabby, standing there with her dark hair pulled back in a bun, a few strands dangling down past her eyes to her mouth. A beautiful girl at 17, pretty enough at 40 to get away with silly things, like how she still had the five wadded up in her hand, giving the boy a look like, "It's your parents' money, Hito." The kid said, "Blue ones make my stomach hurt," but took it anyway. Gabby pocketed the crumpled five. The scoreboard buzzed and the game was over. President Rhonda said, "Okay, girls, now for the fun part," telling each woman exactly what to do and how she wanted it done. The popcorn machine needed vinegar boiled in the kettle and the glass door wiped clean. "Check the presser gauge on the fire extinguisher. We want that arrow on green." Rhonda was full of these helpful but direct commands, sweat stains blossoming out from beneath her arms as she barked her orders. The air was cool, late October, and Gabby was trying not to think about the five she'd pocketed, how it was so easy, and the boy hadn't even noticed, when Rhonda turned to her and said, "Gabs, you got the money tonight." Calling her Gabs, like a real American girl, like they played softball together or something, whatever it was big white women did on the weekends.
"You're sure?"
"No, I usually do it," Rhonda said, fanning her pit stains. "But I got to get John David washed up and in bed early tonight, going on an official visit to UT in the morning. Longhorns might be finally offering my boy a full ride."
Gabby said, "You bathe him?"
Rhonda's thin eyebrows, darker than her blonde curls, narrowed. "I tuck him in at night. That's all. Gotta make sure he gets his 8 hours.
Gabby waited, not wanting to say the wrong thing again.
"Stack the bills up by denomination, you know, like 20s and 10s.
Rhonda talked over her shoulder as she opened the popcorn machine's glass door.
"Tally them all up. Put the paper in the bag along with the pen. Can't tell you how many times we've been stuck down here on a Friday night hunting up a damn ink pen. And then you lock the bag. That's all there is to it."
"Yes, I understand."
"And don't let Coach Harris come sniffing around," Rhonda said, speaking to all the women now. "I mean it. Not even for some cold nachos."
Gabby already had the zipper undone, deciding she'd start with the big bills and work her way down. Still thinking about the five in her pocket, how easy it would be to take more. Stuff some napkins in the bag, hide the money in the popcorn machine, or maybe the drink cooler. When Rhonda said,
"Hey, Gabs."
Gabby looked up at the woman.
"You remember where I keep the key?"
Gabby Menchaca did not know where Rhonda, president of the Booster Club, kept the bank key's bag. She didn't get to tell the lady president that either, not before the two men entered the concession stand, walked right past all those women, over to the plywood swing-down door propped open above the front window, and closed it. The men worked together, locking the latches on both sides. The cowboy finished first. Gabby noticed a small knife in his hand as he turned, thick with different blades and other tools. Gabby thinking, what was the word? But just standing there, waiting for the English to come when the cowboy said,
"All we want's the monies, ladies."
Paused, looked to his partner, the black man with the sad but thoughtful eyes, and added,
"Might take me one of them big-ass pickles, too."
Nas didn't trust Burke. Always confused about what to call the short quarterback with the broke dick arm and the black boy name, Anton, shot putting dead duck passes all across the field. Nas already 10 yards past the defender and he'd have to stop, come back, jump up real high, and snag the ball out the air. Over and over. Nas could still hear that one Longhorn coach saying, "Well, sure, you can catch a jump ball, but what about a slant?" Dumbass Burke always changing the play in the huddle, calling Double Fly Rocket 87. Like Nas never got tired. He did. Got so tired of Anton Burkhead's bullshit, he wouldn't even return the man's calls. Had to send him a text the other day that read, "Got a plan, Nas? A new play. Holler at me if you're looking to score." Nas called him back because he needed the money. But all Burke kept talking about was getting the gun, calling it a piece or a nine, like they were on the streets talking in code. Except there weren't any real streets in Enoch, Texas. There were roads and highways, sure, oil fields, pine trees, red brick Baptist churches, one Walmart. Nas got the picture anyway, telling Burke, "I'll see what I can find," doubting if they'd really need a gun to rob the concession stand. But now Nas was starting to question his own judgment, especially when that big woman said, "Nas Taylor? I ain't seen you around a coon's age. How's your grandma? She still a big Longhorns fan?" Burke hadn't said anything about disguises, hockey masks, or even pantyhose. When he'd shown up wearing that cowboy hat, Nas just pulled the hood up on his hoodie and cinched it down tight. Not a single person had spoken to them while they were outside watching the game. "And you," the big woman said, pointing. "I think I remember you too." Burke shook his head. "No, we ain't from around here." "Sure you are, the dynamic duo. Anton and Nas took the Eagles all the way to state championship back in 06. "Yeah?" Burke said, palming the pocket knife now. "You remember that?" "Course I do. You boys laid the foundation, paved the way for the Eagles to make all them runs we've had in the last couple years." "You hearing this?" Burke said, looking over his shoulder at Nas. "We paved the way. Laid the foundation." Nod had his eyes on the cute Mexican mama with her hand in the money bag, thinking about the debt he owed. All those trips to the horse races up in Hot Springs, Arkansas, hoping one of those ponies would win big enough to make up for the touchdowns he never scored at UT. "We came here," Nas said, taking the lead now, "for the money." Burke tipped his hat to the big woman. She smiled back at him, saying, "Y'all gonna take it up to Coach Harris for us or something?" Nas was still staring at the chica, liking the way she already had the bank bag open, when she zipped it shut and called out to the big woman. "President Rhonda?" Burke said, "President?" The big woman waved it off, saying, "Miss Minchak is new to the Booster Club, but damn if she don't work real hard." "You still like for me to count the money?" Rhonda ignored the woman's question and squatted down, having some trouble getting her knee on the ground, looking back up at Nas and Burke as she fiddled with her shoelaces. "So you boys are here to take the money up to Coach Harris. That's what this is about." Burke glanced sideways at his partner. Nas gave him nothing, not even a nod. "Sure," Burke said. "Yeah, we're here to help." "That ain't what I asked, Mr. Burkhead." The big woman's sausage fingers fumbled with the laces. "I want to know if Coach Harris sent you boys over here to collect this money. That's what I'm asking." Nas got the feeling Big Rhonda was saying something without really saying it. He looked away from her, past all the frozen white faces to the pretty tan one. Nas couldn't be sure, but he felt like that little lady was trying to send him a message, moving her deep brown eyes side to side, just a little, enough to make a point. Burke said, "All right, fine," before Nas could put words to the Mexican women's code. Coach Harris sent us down here to collect. Don't worry about counting the bills or nothing. Just go ahead and hand that money over. It sounded like paper tearing, or some sort of Velcro strip. Rhonda tugging at her ankle as she stood, moving fast for a woman her size. Nas didn't see the snub-nosed revolver in her hand until she was fully erect, breathing heavy as she said, "Coach Harris knows better than to come anywhere near this goddamn concession stand." Nas was so busy making eyes at that Mexican woman, he didn't see Burke get his hat off and his hands up, the old quarterback scrambling around in the pocket now, getting ready to run. "Told that bastard already? This here money's for the boys." Rhonda's knuckles went white around the pistol grip. "Pre-game meals, workout shirts, maybe a trip over the pool, you know, something fun to do in the summer." She shook her head. Knots formed along her jaw. "And now he's got y'all all cut up in this mess." Burke's mouth moved, but no words came out. "Got this here Smith & Wesson 38. When I noticed them new mud tires Larry Harris put on his Ford and around $2,000 missing from the Booster Club fund." Burke kept his hands up and fanned his face a little with the hat. "Went straight over to the field house, pulled my pant leg up so he could see I was packing. Told him he better be thanking God my baby boy was a senior and getting letters from all them big schools." Rhonda turned, cheeks going soft as she said, "We're headed over to Austin in the morning, Nas. John David's got his sights set on the Longhorns." Nas was so surprised by the handgun Rhonda had yanked free from the ankle holster, a six-shooter, short-looking and mean, like something a pimp might carry. He hadn't looked at Gabriella Menchaca in the last minute or so, maybe more. But there she stood, pretty as ever, by the drink cooler now, holding that bank bag tight to her chest. Still with his eyes on Gabby, Nas said, "What position the Longhorns wanting John David to play? Looked to me like he might could go both ways." "Fullback gotta be." Rhonda let the gun fall to her waist. "Don't you think? I mean, you just don't see many white linebackers at that level anymore." Out the corner of his eye, Nas noticed Burke putting his hat back on, holding it down low and pushing his head in the way a real cowboy does it. Burke started for the back door and Nas was a little surprised, but glad to know it was over. Rhonda so stuck on her baby boy, she didn't seem to notice or care. Nas was almost outside again, almost free, when Burke stopped, turned, and cut big Rhonda off mid-sentence, saying, "Could you at least spare me one of them pickles?" The concession stand went silent. "My John David's always asking for pickles after a game, too. Says it helps with the cramps." Rhonda grinned and waved Burke over. "Come on, I'll give you one for free." One of the women already screwed the jar's lid back on, but Rhonda was tugging at it now, having some trouble. Burke said, "Here, let me give you a hand." Nas was standing right there beside good-looking Gabby, so close he could smell the nacho cheese in her hair, when Burke ripped the gallon pickle jar from Rhonda's hands and cracked it open on the back of her head. The woman went down on one knee again. A moment later, she was flat on the floor. Pickle juice and blood. Burke picking up the .38 and cocking back the hammer, not wasting any time as he pointed the piece at Gabby and said, "You got the money, honey. Now hand it over." "Think about this, Anton." Nas calling the man his proper name for once, trying to appeal to the brother in him. "They got our names, man. That big one even says she know Grandma Taylor." Rhonda hadn't moved, still lying in the pile of broken glass and scattered pickles. "I know they know, but I want to make sure they remember." Burke made a motion with the gun barrel toward Gabby, letting the six-shooter do the talking for him now. Nas lifted a hand and said, "Game over, man," as he stepped between them. "I ain't letting you take that money." The revolver moved slow up the length of Nas's torso, leveling out between his eyes. "Double fly rocket 87, Burke said. "Like old times, huh? And you know I ain't afraid to pull the trigger." Coach Harris was all the time calling Burke his little gunslinger back in 06. But this was different. There wasn't a football in sight, just a bag of money and a snub-nosed revolver. Made Nas feel alive. Made him forget about that money he owed. Made him want to do something that would make Gabby Menchaca remember him forever. Yeah, Nas thought, and took another step toward the gunslinger. It's time to be the hero.
No,
Gabby said, eyes on Nas as she pushed the bag forward.
It's fine.
One of the other women started to cry when Burke snatched the bank bag, saying,
"Once an eagle, always an eagle."
And then he was gone, running out the back door with the gun in one hand and the money in the other. Nas could almost see himself standing in front of some pot-bellied policeman, Gabby Menchaca by his side, both of them explaining how he'd stood up to the bad guy, told him he wasn't going to let him take that bag. But the bag was gone now, and Rhonda was starting to squirm around in all that pickle juice.
"Vamanos," Gabby whispered, nodding, "before she wakes up good."
It was like Nas was watching a movie, imagining taking Gabby in his arms and pushing those stray hairs back behind her ear. The big kiss before he had to go away. But then he remembered this was real life. The East Texas Pine Curtain. A place you left behind if you could. It was weird. The way he kept standing there while Rhonda got up on all fours and shook her head. Nas waiting for Gabby to look back at him one more time before he walked out that door. She was giving him her sad eyes now. No, not sad. A different expression. Afraid? Nuh-uh. Too focused. Too alert to be scared. This was something else. Nas kept trying to name the expression as he walked out the back door, surprised by how dark the stadium was with the lights off. As he started to run, Nas remembered the way the crowd had cheered when the announcer called his name. Nas jumped the chain-link fence, and then he was out on the field again, slowing as he came to the 50-yard line, tired and out of shape, but clear-headed like he hadn't been in years. Looking over his shoulder as blue lights lit up the East Texas sky, Nas felt guilty for even considering stealing money from the Booster Club. Enoch was a small town, sure, but they'd been good to him. Guilt, Nas thought, standing in the center of his own dark field. That's exactly what he'd seen in that Mexican lady's eyes. The officer had said, "This'll only take a minute," over 3 hours ago. Gabby kept thinking about her boys, how they were probably hungry, while she stood outside the concession stand waiting her turn. Once inside, she told the policeman everything just as it had happened, even the part about how the black guy, the one Rhonda had called Nas Taylor, had tried to stop the man with the name she couldn't remember. And then it was over. The parking lot empty, everyone gone except President Rhonda, holding a package of frozen hot dogs on the back of her head, standing beside her enormous SUV.
"You did what you had to do, Gabs."
Gabby nodded, kept her eyes down.
"Not what I'd have done, but I get it."
Headlights blinked and Rhonda started wedging herself into the SUV. Gabby said,
"Did you lock up?"
"I'll tell you the truth, hon,"
the big woman said, pulling the hot dogs away from her head.
"I can't remember."
Gabby waited. Rhonda said,
"You better make sure, though,"
and started back out of the vehicle again.
"There's right many people that steal a case of Diet Cokes before anybody could say burrito."
Gabby shook her head and waved her arms.
"No, no, please. Let me do it."
"But I'm the president, Gabs. It's my responsibility."
"Yes, but I have made the mistake. I gave the man the club money."
Rhonda clicked her tongue, pulling a lanyard out from around her neck, a key dangling at the end of the loop.
"I'm almost positive I locked it.
but it wouldn't hurt to check. Gabby took the key and turned, walking faster the closer she got to the concession stand, almost a trot by the time she reached the back door. The taillights of Rhonda's SUV burned red in the distance, then disappeared. Gabby's heart beat fast and wild, like some ranchera tune from her past. She twisted the knob, and the door swung open. The concession stand was completely dark on the inside. Gabby slapped at the walls for the switch. When the fluorescent bulbs flickered on, the black man was sitting up on the counter, kicking his heels softly against the drink cooler's lid. He said, "All them looks you gave me."
"Looks?" "Yeah, like when you tried to let me know we didn't need to bring up Coach Harris around that big woman. It was the way you moved your eyes. You saw me moving them, like I was saying, 'No, no.'"
Nas nodded.
"But I wasn't sure about that last look. Kept thinking maybe you were scared. Maybe you needed my help."
"Yes, scared. That was it."
"Nope," Nas said, pushing off the counter and landing on his feet. "That ain't the word I was looking for. I will give you half of it."
I'd like to see the look on Anton Burkhead's face when he opened up that blue bank bag. Dumbass probably won't even take a peek till he's across the Louisiana state line, maybe on up into Arkansas.
Nas paused, smiling.
"What you put in there? Some napkins or something?"
Gabby kept her mouth shut, not wanting to tell the man that he was right.
"All right, cut the shit. Where'd you hide the money?"
"I have two boys, Gustavo and Chewy, seniors for the..."
Nas stepped forward, rougher looking when he got up close.
"You lied to me, baby. I think you broke my heart."
She stared at him a moment, then moved her brown eyes slowly across the concession stand floor, back behind where he was standing toward the drink cooler. Nas's smile spread wide.
"Sunk it down deep, huh? Gonna have to give me a blow dryer."
He was already moving that way, opening the cooler's blue lid, his whole right arm down in that icy water, when Gabby said,
"Excuse me, Mr. Nas?"
Still sloshing around, an old ball player not giving up that easy.
"I use a Ziploc bag."
When he turned, holding the plastic baggie packed with all that cash, Gabby swung the fire extinguisher, the medium-sized red one Rhonda had explained was for grease fires only. It connected flush with the side of Nas's head. His back thumped against the concrete floor, all at once, like a backwards belly flop. What Gabby thought was odd, though, was the way he didn't drop the bag, holding on to it like a football, cradled in the crook of his arm. As she reached for the money, the urge to wink and say, "My eyes, what are they telling you now, puppy?" entered her mind. But she was afraid she'd mess up the words and the meaning would get lost in translation. Instead, Gabby cleaned the blood off the fire extinguisher, walked out of the concession stand, and made sure to lock the door. She was halfway to the parking lot, the baggie tucked under her shirt, when she realized Nas Taylor would eventually wake up. And then what? It might take a month, maybe less, for the police to find the other man and realize he'd never had the money. Gabby could see Gustavo and Chewy sitting at the kitchen table, already on to their second helping of steak, heads turning, mouths full, as three hard knocks rattled the Menchaca's front door. Gabby's thoughts burned through in broken Spanish and blood as she started back for the concession stand, considering the weight of that fire extinguisher, or maybe a glass shard from the busted pickle jar. Either way, Gabriela Menchaca knew better than to leave a mess.
Double Fly Rocket 87 is copyrighted by Eli Craner. Music for this podcast was obtained from purpleplanet.com. Mixing and editing for the podcast were done by Kevin Wheeler and Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at ElleryQueenMysteryMagazine.com.